I would like to introduce to you a very successful and prospering member of your Prosperity Mastermind group, Ron Murray. And Ron is the only person in Michigan who is licensed for success. And for those of you who are watching on closed circuit television and perhaps can't make it out, his new Michigan license plate spells success. Isn't that fantastic? Thank you, Ron. And Ron deserves that title or that tag of success. I'm sure he won't mind me telling you this. It's a personal thing, but we are a part of the same mastermind group, and so we share each other's unfolding blessings. Ron has just demonstrated a $10,500 plus annual increase in his salary. And a number of other little goodies that... You bet. You know that every one of you is licensed for success? You're commissioned for prosperity. The state of Michigan can't do it, but the universe has already done it. You have right here a breastplate, a buckler, if you will, and on it are those magic letters, success. You were designed to be successful. And all that you have to do is to accept that fact, begin to believe it, and fulfill the conditions of that experience that we call success, and it's automatically yours. It already is yours. Success and prosperity are not something that is going to happen at some future time. This is not a condition that God is going to bring to pass somewhere along the way. It has already occurred, and it is yours, and it is mine. But we must come to believe it. I received a card in the mail today from someone that believes it. You'll see that it's on a large Delta Airlines postcard. Dear Jack, your prosperity class is the greatest. On my way to Florida for Thanksgiving holidays, upon my return, we'll take delivery of the 450 SEL Mercedes Benz. Keep the faith. I wish you could hear and see the magnificent experiences of you, of all of you. Just some of them are just so beautiful. And yours is beautiful too. Let me hear about it. Let me know about it. You know, we've been defining prosperity in these weeks as we have talked about changing our consciousness. And sometimes we can understand a thing better by examining its opposite. And what is the opposite of prosperity? Poverty. And poverty is the absence of prosperity in the life of a person or of a group of people. But what is poverty? Poverty is stagnation of the soul. And to be stagnant means to be, according to Mr. Webster, not moving or flowing, without a current, motionless, foul from standing still, polluted, stale, lacking liveliness or briskness, inactive. Now, does that describe a pond or your life? Which? Because anywhere that there is poverty or lack in any area of your life, it's only because in that area you are stagnant, not moving or flowing, without a current, motionless. And you'll also see that you've become foul from standing still. The motionlessness of our soul creates that foulness of the mind and the negative emotions that correspond. So if you are experiencing any lack, any poverty, If there is any area in which you're unfulfilled, it's caused by stagnation of the soul. And you're not moving or flowing. And you stand motionless, waiting for your good to come to you. Have you ever stood there waiting for your good to come to you? Even praying for your good to come to you. And it can't come to you. And the reason it can't come is because it is becalmed upon the sea of consciousness. If you are at a standstill, you can know that that's contrary to God's will for you. Because the eternal movement of spirit is always forward and toward an expanding newness. Any poverty or lack that has ever been experienced by anyone, anywhere, is as a result of clinging to some old thought or attitude or activity. Hanging on to our old concepts is the stagnation of the soul that holds a person in bondage. You know, sometimes the good can become the enemy of the better. Can you remember a time in your life when your magnificent good unfolded, a new experience? It may have been a marriage or a new job. Your great good had at last come, your ship had come in. And oh joy, joy to the heart, oh joy, my good has arrived. And you settled down into your good. You settled down and began to cling to the good, to protect the position, the newfound position that you had, refusing to expand and grow and to move forward. And guess what happened? In a very little while, in a short season, that good is no longer good. It becomes foul and stagnant and bitter to the taste, and the sweetness is gone. You see, that good has become the enemy of the better. Anytime that we cling to something and stand still in something and do not move forward into the next expanding good, then we have entered into a new period of stagnation. The idea that prosperity is the accumulation of things or experiences or relationships is totally wrong. You see, prosperity is the flow of all good into our lives as the result of fulfilling the law of flow or of movement. And we will have everything we need and more if we don't cling to anything. Clinging is being tight, causing motion to cease and resulting in stagnation. You know what being tight is. We've all seen someone else who was tight. Tight, according again to Mr. Webster, is close-fisted, stingy, affected by scarcity, difficult to deal with, constricted, cramped, constrained, rigid. And if you'll look at all of the tight people that you can remember in your life, you'll see that they've always have had a tight or closed experience. They are affected by scarcity. They're always difficult to deal with. They're constricted to old habit patterns. They're cramped and constrained in their lifestyle. And they're rigid in their responses to life. They may have accumulated some of the world's monetary good. Their bank account may be more than satisfactory. But usually what they're doing each month is counting their mounting interest. And if the refrigerator motor burns out, there is not that joyful experience of going out and buying a new one. The hanging on to the old, to where our good is. Have you ever seen anyone like that? A tight person always lives in fear and in apprehension, and a tight person is always uptight about something. If you don't believe it, check it out. Now, if we wish to prosper, we're going to have to change from being tight to tithe, from tight to tithe. Tithe means a tenth. But tithe means more than a tenth. It means the giving of a tenth or of a portion of that which comes to you. It means the sending out of your good. It means not just the receiving of your good, but the taking of a portion of that good and sending it out into life, putting it into motion, not letting that motion cease or stop or freeze up or become rigid or tight. Prosperity is motion in action. And as we give of a portion of that which we receive, we increase the movement or the flow of good. We become channels. Our prosperity exists to the degree that we are a channel of that movement or of that flow of that divine energy. Tithing means that you dedicate a portion of your income for truly infinite and sacred purposes. But it also means that you devote a tenth of your time to prayer and meditation. Tithing also means that you're constantly giving of yourself, especially in any area in which you have a personal need. If you need something, give some of that something away regularly. Don't hold on to it thinking, well, because I need it, I will hold on to all of this I have. Because then that's tight again. And the moment that we become tight, we have stopped the flow of our good. You've heard of giving until it hurts? No. Give until it feels good. It hurts when we start giving. You bet it hurts. Because this is an old idea that has us uptight. Why do you think that the scriptures say that God loves a cheerful giver? Because in the beginning, there's not much cheer in it because we think that we are robbing of ourselves. We're taking our good away and we're sending it out there into the world, and they might not appreciate it or they might not know that we were the ones that gave it. Remember that abundance is a flowingness. It's a movement. It's a motion. But it is an overflowingness. Abundance is an ever-increasing overflowingness. And begin to get the feeling for this now, this feeling of movement, of motion to you and through you out into life. To increase and to overflow is what we call growth. And we must be willing to change in order to grow, because growth is change. As a matter of fact, we must become willing to break out of our comfort zone. Do you know what your comfort zone is? Your comfort zone is that state of consciousness, that state of good that you have settled down into. And most of us do not wish to break out of our comfort zone. A person who is on welfare, I'm talking about public welfare, not the universal welfare that we are plugging into in this series of lessons, has settled down into a comfort zone. It has become comfortable. It is difficult to break out of that comfort zone. It is a discomfort comfort zone. And growth means breaking out of that comfort zone. And we're afraid to do this in the beginning because it means that we might have to go and do some things that we're not equipped to do that might be even embarrassing or difficult. We might have to give out of ourselves. We're going to have to break out of this little shell that we have put around ourselves and break through that into new experiences. Let me give you an example, I think, that will demonstrate it to you. Just a few months ago, someone was talking to me and said, "Why have you not been on radio or television?" And I said, "Well, I've been so busy. I have so many things to do. And one of these days we'll get around to that." And I walked away from the conversation, and it did not ring exactly true to me, and so I sat down to examine it. And this is what I found out when I became honest with myself. The part that I had said was true, but it wasn't the whole truth. The rest of the truth was that I had a comfort zone. And that I had a fear that if I was on television or radio, a new medium for me, that I would be discomforted, meaning that I might not do it well. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Why, I might even be a failure at it. Why, I might be who knows what at it. I saw that I had a comfort zone that would not permit me to have that experience. It was not happening to me. Now, in that moment, I said to myself, this is something that I must do because I have a fear of doing it. And whether I do it well or not is not important, but the fact that I must do it because I must break through this comfort zone. It's more comfortable for me to not do it than it is to do it. And all growth, all prosperity is moving through that comfort zone, breaking through it. And you've got one. Every one of us has had one that we have to break through. Growth means breaking out of our comfort zone. A prosperous person is always a wealthy person. And the word wealthy, of course, comes from the word weal, W-E-A-L, which means prosperity, happiness, welfare. Or to fare well. To weal is to fare well. And remember the old statement when you were parting from a friend, farewell? That's what it meant. Fare well. I wish you your weal. And weal meant all of the good that is for your well-being. And its primary emphasis in the beginning was not on material things, but on states of mind that are conducive to the well-being of the soul. I wish your soul its well-being until I see you again. Now, wealth is first a quality of the soul. There's no material wealth that is not preceded by the soul quality of wealth. And if you and I are seeking wealth as an outer experience first, that our soul will respond to and rejoice in and be grateful for later, and we'll probably miss it in both the outer world, the material world, and in the invisible world of the soul. Because it is first and foremost an experience of the soul. Now, in the universe, there is no such thing as a free lunch. You've seen this poster that I'm holding up, and for the benefit of those that are on tape, it shows a little fish swimming along with a smile on its face, just about to be gobbled up by a larger fish with a smile on its face, just about to be gobbled up by a still larger fish with a smile on its face, and so on. And way out here is Jaws. There's no such thing as a free lunch. There is no such thing as something for no thing. There's no such thing as activity for inactivity. There's no such thing as movement or flow for those that stand still. Can you see that, and do you believe it? Because it is exceedingly important that you come into an understanding that what you seek can only come from the movement that you generate. And no one can generate it for you. No one can give you your good. You get out of life just what you put into it, but multiplied by a factor of 10. And someone would say, well, suppose that you put nothing into life. You get nothing back. Aha. But the nothing that you get back is larger than the nothing that you gave. Do you follow that? And not only is it larger, but it is heaped up, pressed down, and running over. You give nothing. Nothing comes back, except it's a larger nothing. You live, you keep standing in a larger hole. There's a larger vacuum in your life. Read the meaning of the word stagnant again, and you'll see that pond just gets more and more stagnant, and there are more and more little wigglies in it. If you've got any wigglies in your life, do you know what wigglies are? The 6th chapter of Luke, the 38th verse says, for if you give, you will get. Your gift will return to you in full and overflowing measure, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, and running over. You are God's own beloved child. And what you give does not come back equal to what you gave. Oh, no, no. No, it stepped up to a higher vibration, and it comes back increased by a factor of 10. You see, prosperity is overflowingness. Prosperity is movement and motion. Now, would you, like Ron, like to be licensed for success? Well, of course you are, as I told you. I'm going to give you a success formula that is absolutely unbreakable. I'm going to give you in this class a success formula that will guarantee your success for this life and all that follow it, and a formula that will not only work for you, but will work and continue to work for all of those whose lives you touch, and for those people that live in your name or close to you. Jacob was perhaps the first person we have an account of who was licensed for success, Ron. And Jacob had a spiritual experience in which was revealed to him directly from God those things that were necessary for Jacob to do to enter into a partnership with God. And Jacob did what he was told, and Jacob really got with it. When he was told what to do, he did it. He didn't play games. Because he had reached that point in his life when he was just sick and tired of being sick and tired of the failure that he was experiencing. And the result was amazing in his life. As a matter of fact, his demonstration hasn't stopped yet. Now listen to the amazing agreement that Jacob and God entered into and to the story that unfolded around it. And as I read the story to you, remember that you can have the same agreement right now with God, and it will never stop working for you and for the people that you love. And I'll read to you from the 28th chapter of Genesis. Now, Jacob was in a place that was called Luz. And he went to sleep that night. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Jacob, in his meditation and in his sleep that followed, had established a conscious contact with God. And any one of you who has ever had a conscious spiritual experience will know the meaning of this descriptive term. The angels of God were ascending and descending on it. When you are experiencing a conscious contact with God, there is this exchange of ideas, of understanding, of power, this unfolding something. It's like the angels of God are ascending and descending, this exchange, this conscious communion. And behold, the Lord stood beside him, and the Lord said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. And the land on which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. By you and your descendants shall all the families of the earth bless themselves. Behold, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that of which I have spoken to you. That's a fantastic declaration by the creative intelligence and power of the universe, isn't it? By the Lord God. Now, that declaration is not just made to Jacob, it's made to you. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. Have you had that experience that right where you are, the Lord God is, and you did not know it? You were out there trying to keep things together, trying to make ends meet, pushing and pulling and hoping and praying, and the Lord was there all the time, and you did not know it? And Jacob was afraid. Now, that does not mean fearful. He respected. Fear meant respect. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And of all that thou givest me, I will give the tenth to thee. All that thou givest me, I shall give the tenth. You see, Jacob entered into a success contract that was called a covenant. And he immediately was licensed for success. Now, a covenant is a binding agreement made by two or more persons or parties. It's a contract. A covenant is a binding agreement that both parties will do something for their mutual advantage or success or satisfaction. It's a commitment from one to the other. Now, Jacob immediately got busy fulfilling his part of the contract. And what was his part? His part was to give, trusting God to provide. Trusting, knowing, and believing, it was incumbent upon him that he would go out into his future experiences moment by moment, trusting or believing that God was going to provide everything that he needed every moment of the way. Now, he made a contract with God that he would do this. And that of all that came to him, he would give a part of it. It would flow out through him. He would not keep it as others had tried to do. Now, did his method work? You bet it did. He was given weal or wealth, everything that he needed, he experienced. He became a millionaire, even by our standards. And he was given power of the mind, and his family relationships were restored. And his life became meaningful, not only in his time, but are you and I not still using him as an example, even in this very moment? We're talking about Jacob, aren't we? And his name was changed by God to Israel. And it means the Prince of God, but it metaphysically means an illumined or whole person. You see, Jacob learned that when God is your partner, he pays all of the expenses. When God is your partner, he pays all of the expenses. A truly prosperous man is a shining example. It's a person who identifies himself with all the good that is. And he's like a miniature sun, giving of light and warmth. And like the sun, a truly prosperous person demands no personal credit and makes no effort to get recognition, because he knows that it is of a higher power. He's like a sun, radiating that energy and giving it out to life. You'll notice that you've never heard the sun thunder. It doesn't thunder, it shines. It does not do anything to call attention to its shining. It simply shines. It gives of itself its warmth. All of the qualities that are there are radiated out into life. It simply gives of itself. And you are a sun, a radiating center of all that God is. All that the Father has, you already are, but you cannot experience it except to the extent that you release it. All that you can experience is what you release, is what you put into motion, and you will never, until the end of this universe, experience anything other than what you give. If you want something, you must give it. You must project it. You must extrude it. You must send it out from yourself. If you wish to be loved, you must love first. If you wish to be comforted, you must comfort first. Whatever it is that you want. If you are broke and need money, you must give of your money first. You cannot dare to save your money or to hold it back and say, I don't have enough to give. I can't afford to give. That is the person that cannot afford to not give. Andrew Carnegie, for example, when he was an uneducated laborer working in a steel steel meal. Well, I'll say it later. For a few pennies an hour, gave away dimes when dimes were dollars. And when he did not have them, he gave them so that he would have them, so that they would come back to him increased tenfold and a hundredfold, because that was the education that he had from within. He had the greatest of all educations, the kind that comes from a conscious contact with God. He was like Jacob. And the Spirit had spoken to him, and he moved into action. Listen to the prophet on giving. Then a rich man said, "Speak to us of giving." And he answered, "You give but little when you give of your possessions. It's when you give of yourself that you truly give. And what is fear of need but need itself? Is not dread of thirst when your well is full, the thirst that is unquenchable?" That's the tight person, always uptight about being fulfilled. "See first that you yourself deserve to be a giver and an instrument of giving. For in truth it is life that gives unto life, while you who deem yourself a giver are but a witness." Prosperity begins to happen to us when we realize that we have never, nor shall we ever, give anything that we own, because we don't own anything and never can. We are channels through whom the universal good flows. And yes, for a time, we can put our name on some things. And is it good to accumulate a tenth or more of what we earn and put it into a savings account? Oh, yes, it is. Is a penny saved a penny earned? Perhaps. Is a penny given a penny earned? No. It's 10 cents. Which do you prefer? Both is the answer. Both to receive and to retain a portion. But if that portion is to sacrifice the part that must be given, then the law is broken. And the law cannot be broken. We will be broken by that law. And so if we would be successful, we must give, and we must give of ourselves. And I would suggest to us, it's not springtime when we do our spring cleaning, but it's a pretty good time, a season of the year, to go home and clean out your closets and really look at your wardrobe. And if you know that you're not going to wear that very nice suit or dress or whatever it happens to be, you're keeping it because you might wear it sometime. Take it out of the closet. Go out into the garage. And look at all the things that you know you're never, ever really going to use. Put them in a pile. And then don't have a garage sale. Have a garage giveaway. Now that will open their eyes, won't it? Put one of those signs on the corner. Say, "Come and get it." You'll find the right people that need that which you're releasing. Let me tell you the beautiful story of an eagle's feather. It happened to my secretary, Gretchen. You know Gretchen. And she and her husband are attracted to the great Southwest. They have family there and a desire to perhaps someday be there. And last year they were there and went out into the mountains, into the hill country, and came to a pueblo, an Indian village. And there they met two beautiful little girls, and I have their pictures here, these two beautiful little girls. And they asked the little girls if they could take their pictures, and they said yes, and they took their pictures, and then they gave them each a quarter, the perfect exchange, the value given for what they received. And I'll read to you Gretchen's account of the experience. After the photos were taken, all four of us sat on the footbridge which crosses the stream running through the pueblo. Taos Pueblo is built between this lovely stream and the sacred mountain, sacred to the Indians. And as we sat there, an enormous golden eagle rose from a clump of trees. flew directly over our heads and toward the sacred mountain. As it passed over us, it dropped a feather, and one of the children gleefully ran out to catch that feather. She was delighted and told us that her grandfather had assured her that if one catches the feather from a flying eagle before it touches the ground, that their most heartfelt desire would come to pass. "Your wish will come true," is the way she really put it. And she held the feather for a while, and then she knew that her wish was fulfilled. And she gave it to Joe and to me, saying that her dream had already come to pass and that she wanted us to have it so that ours would happen to us. At this time, we desired to own property in New Mexico. This was our earnest desire, and we carried the eagle feather home, carefully packed it in a mailing tube because it was almost 20 inches long. Long feather. And after we'd been home several months, we found we were able to purchase that choice piece of property at the foot of the sacred mountains north of Albuquerque for much less than we had expected. It has now risen in value several thousand dollars over what we paid for it. And because we feel our dream has come to pass, we have given our feather to two dear people, knowing that such a gift from life is only ours after we have passed it on to another. Now, I learned of this story not from Gretchen, but from the two people to whom she had given it. That was Colleen and Noel Street when they were here. And they were ecstatic because they knew that their dream, the special one that they had at that moment, would come to pass. Life is constantly dropping into our hands, our waiting and eager hands, an eagle feather. It may not be in the exact form of an eagle feather, but can you have your good by clinging to that which comes to you in this manner? Or when your good has come to you, must you not pass it on? Must you not look for that special opportunity to let your good flow? Must you not be eager to excite the mind and the heart of another person by being the source of beauty and of love and of expectancy? Your good will trigger the good in someone else. I wish you could have seen, I've never seen Noel Street as excited as he was about that eagle feather. Your life is filled with eagle feathers that someone would just be so turned on by if they could only receive from you. My friends, if you and I really knew and understood the law of giving, there would be a stampede by all of those who were trying to be the first one to be first in line to give. You would probably get run over by the people behind you. Because there is no receiving except as we learn to give, but to give joyfully, understanding fully that what we're doing is creating movement, motion, and giving of what? Of our material possessions? Of course, of course. And if you have something that you're not using and you're not going to use, put it into the stream of life. Let it begin to be utilized again. It was created for purpose and for good. And let someone use it, and it will be for your good. It will bless you. Your giving will bless you. The more things that are out there in life working for you, the greater the power. I worked here late last night and left the church, and there were a few people here. And as I drove away, the lights were on, and I thought of tonight. And I thought of the marvelous creativity, the energy that would be in this building tonight with all of you here in the sanctuary filled and downstairs at the lower level filled with those watching on closed circuit television. Think about it. You're a part of an energy field and of a field of love and of understanding. There is movement, there is flow. As you go back into your life this week, remember that the Lord is here and you did not know it, maybe. But now you know it. And if you have a need at any moment, stop and let the movement, the power of this combined group flow into your life. You'll never be alone. You'll never be without strength, without understanding. The October the 12th, Daily Word, October the 12th, 1972, Daily Word, has a statement that was written by Sig Paulson, a great Unity minister. He said, if you really believe that as you give, so do you receive, you can easily double your living by doubling your giving. This week lets you and I go out into life and prove that we believe the law of giving and receiving by seeing how much of ourselves we can really give away. How much energy can you radiate? How much power can you let flow from you out into the life of someone that you love or someone that you never saw before? Pass a stranger on the street and see the need upon his face and let your energy touch him just as the energy of this group is sustaining and supporting you. Let it pass through you and out into life. Let your joy, your love, and your material substance, that's called money, go from you and out into someone else's life and touch them. Perhaps the greatest contract that I have ever read is the covenant that Charles and Myrtle Fillmore entered into with God on the 7th day of December, 1892. And it was almost 50 years later before anyone knew that they had made this contract with God. No one saw it. And yet it became visible in that period of time. It became visible as buildings, as property, as the movement of unity. It became visible in the form of thousands of people being healed in body and mind and estate. I'm going to read that covenant to you, but as I read it to you, I am going to enter into that covenant again myself. Incidentally, here is a copy of it reproduced, and there are their signatures. They entered into this contract, this covenant, with God. We, Charles Fillmore and Myrtle Fillmore, husband and wife, hereby dedicate ourselves, our time, our money, all that we have and all that we expect to have, to the Spirit of Truth, and through it, to the Society of Silent Unity. It being understood and agreed that the said Spirit of Truth shall render unto us an equivalent for this dedication, an equivalent in peace of mind, health of body, wisdom, understanding, love, life, and an abundant supply of all things necessary to meet every want without our making any of these things the object of our existence. In the presence of the conscious mind of Jesus Christ, the 7th day of December, 1892. My friends, in the final analysis, you have only one thing to give, and that's yourself, to God. We have been asking God to give to us all of our lives, but how much of yourself have you ever given to God? Have you totally dedicated your life to the service of God and to the people about you? And have you entered into a contract, a covenant, and said, God, here am I, use me for the rest of my life? That's frightening, isn't it? It breaks us out of our comfort zone, doesn't it? You bet, if you want to have your comfort zone start putting the screws on you, think about this covenant. I made this covenant a number of years ago in my life, and I'm rededicating myself to this now, to this covenant, that here am I, the only thing that I have to give to life is this self of me, to be used, to be utilized, to be a channel for divine love and peace and for whatever purpose that the Spirit of God can use me for. And I fully and totally and completely believe that everything necessary to meet every want that I have will be mine. Do you believe that? You bet. This week, go out into your life, giving yourself away, knowing with absolute certainty that with God as your partner, He pays all of the expenses. And that as you have given of yourself, totally and completely, without reservation, everything that you need will be drawn to you in an effortless way. You'll have a good week, my friend, and a fantastic life. And years after you're gone, they'll be talking about you just as we've been talking about Jacob. So it is.
This concludes the lesson on tape number 9. Now proceed to tape number 10 for the continuation of Prosperity Principles That Work.